Everybody. Ding, 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 ding. I don't have a glass to tinkle on, but really, really lovely to have so many ladies here and a couple of gents in the audience as well. Thank you for coming. My name's Heather Gordon, and I'm the small and medium business lead at Microsoft New Zealand. I've been there, for 9 years now. Feels like just a couple of weeks ago that I started, but yeah, I think the grey hair and the wrinkles are showing through now. So been at Microsoft for a number of years and absolutely loving it. I'm really pleased to be able to open this year's Women in IT event. We try to do this every year, and it's great to get so many females together to talk and share ideas and network with one another. This evening, we've got a really, really great lineup of ladies that are going to talk to us and share some ideas with us and share their stories with us, just through their journey in their careers. The first lady that we have up is Frances Valentine. And just to give you a little bit of a bio on Frances, Frances is the founder and the chairperson of the Mind Lab, which is an education lab designed to develop the digital and the collaborative skills of students and their teachers. Frances was also previously the CEO of the Media Design School. The fabulous thing is this year she's won a number of awards, and I'll just call out a couple of those awards. The first one is the New Zealand Entrepreneurship Award for Women in Film and Television, and the Gold Award for Engaging Youth in ICT at the NZ CIO Awards. And probably the best award of all is the new business in Asia Pacific, which was judged by Steve Wozniak and Sir Richard Branson. So please join me in welcoming Frances up to the stage.
It's a great privilege to be here, and certainly to be surrounded by such a dynamic woman is brilliant, and you all should get a little certificate just for coming along and spending your time here tonight. I love speaking with other friends in my company, and I've got a really great story because I didn't really know what I wanted to be, and fabulous. And I ended up in education sort of through technology, and so I've never really divided the two. I've always been a technologist within education, and I set up the Mind Lab, which is only a year old business now, and to recently win this Best Business, the New Business Award in Asia Pacific was such an incredible privilege, and it really, really should go to my staff, to be honest. We're pretty much a female company too, which is wonderful. What I want to talk to you about today, and I've got 15 minutes, and I'm very bad at talking for 15 minutes, give me an hour and I'm really happy, is talent. And really my whole life has looked at what is the future talent need that we need going forward, and my sweet spot is 2020, which is only 5 years away. You know, it's sort of, you know, we're 15% of the way through the century already, and we're still talking about 21st century, and I think we've got to really think about going forward and what do we really need. So I really want to talk to mums. So I'm a mum, I have teenage boys, and some of the problems I think we have actually come from a bias that mothers have about their daughters particularly. And I'm sure this group's very different than that, so we're not talking to you directly, but talking to you as a general group. What we have right now is interesting data on the population coming through. So right now we have a number of people who are fantastic entrepreneurs and scientists and technologists and creatives and designers who are creating great things. And what they need is a lot of technical people. And they're finding those technical people all over the world. And for anyone who works in a company, you'll know that you're probably hiring all over the world to find those people that you need, those technical gurus of all sorts, from salespeople right through to hardcore coders and programmers. So you've got these people who are developing products that are more simplified and more digital and kind of cooler and fun. And on the other side, you've also got another group who are the scientists and the technologists and the designers looking at sustainability. You know, how can we feed, educate, and look after our world's population? And they too need a whole stack of science and technology graduates. So we've got this demand that's growing, we're all fighting for the same people. So wherever we go in the world, you talk to technology companies, they're saying, our number one challenge is talent. How do we find it? Now what's really scary for me is between now and 2020, in 5 years, there are going to be another 60 million graduates with IT or STEM type qualifications in Asia Pacific. 60 million. In the whole world, there were 200 million. So it's growing at the most exponential rate. And the reason for that is we've got suddenly access. So if you live in Borneo, or you live in the Papua New Guinea, or you live in Samoa, or you live in Thailand, because of online education and access and urbanization in the world, more and more people are becoming educated. And they figured it out. They figured out the qualifications you need. You need science and technology. You need to be technical. And they're looking for the best jobs. So if you're a parent in New Zealand and you have a daughter or a son who's going to be in the work market or the job market in about 5 years, they're going to be up against 60 million more people. At the same time, between now and 2020, there's going to be nearly another billion people in the world. So if you are somewhere around 40 to 45, you probably remember when you went to primary school and the BBC announced that there were 3.5 billion people in the world, and it probably wouldn't get much bigger because we couldn't possibly sustain more than 3.5 billion. And yet here we are heading towards 7.5 billion right now. So we keep talking about education in a very strange way. We keep talking about let's just get to university, and we want our kids to be there. What we really need to look at is what are they actually learning? Because if they are doing a cookie cutter qualification, a BCom, a bachelor, pretty much anything that's off the shelf, they are going to be like that 60 million who are coming through. So if you are hiring, you'll know you don't hire on that qualification, but what you do hire on is talent. And talent is a number of things. It's employability, it's socialized skills, it's people who can get out and be confident, but it's also those technical skills. So at this very time when the world is encouraging our young people to go out and be more technical, more digital, more scientific, more inquisitive, in New Zealand we've actually dropped science as a core subject. And so if you look at the data coming through New Zealand, our daughters in particular are not studying maths, science, or anything around computing. It's appalling. And the reason we're not is that 80% of all subject choices in New Zealand are made by mums. It's a horrible thing to say, but mothers are looking back to when they went to school and they did shorthand and typing, and they went, well, that was my career, so then it must be pretty good. So my daughter to go and do a BA or a marketing degree is perfectly great. The problem is that as you go forward, if you want to be a lawyer, there will be millions of New Zealand lawyers all over the world who have studied New Zealand law. It's a service commodity product. Or an accountant, or a marketing person. What we need is a diverse range of people between technical skills and social skills. So not cookie cutter. Go and pick and mix. Go out there and look at the programs and mix them together. Throw in some psychology. Put in some sociology. Do some arts and design. Bring in the science. Because what people are looking for going forward is diversity. Divergent thinking, people who operate at the fringes, people who don't just blend in. Because if we went blend in just 5 years, we're going to have 60 million more graduates on our doorstep. And I want you to think about that. I know I'm reiterating it, but I really want you to think about it as a parent or a person who's got a niece or a nephew, about what that will really mean in terms of their employability. So I don't want to come here and be a doomsdayer, but I'm really passionate about this. New Zealand could be this amazing hothouse of great talent and entrepreneurs and creative thinkers and innovators who really understand where technology is going. And I think you should look at your schools that your students go to. At primary school, we do an amazing job. We get them all involved with inquiry learning and project-based learning, and they're collaborative, and they've got their devices, and they use their devices across subjects. And by the time they get to high school, if they're lucky, they have a bring-your-own device that is used in one class. And if they're unlucky, they have an ICT classroom down the hallway that nobody goes to. You know, we've got a time right now. So this week is an example. In the UK, they launched coding as a compulsory subject from the age of 5. If you see their curriculum, go online, Google it. It is the most, you look what they're teaching 5-year-olds, it's astounding. It's the same thing we teach at the Mind Lab at 5. They really can actually cope with quite interesting analytics and around code and developing games and apps. Estonia, a country smaller than New Zealand, has now been teaching code as a compulsory subject now for 12 years. I have two Finns on my staff from Finland, and they have been teaching coding as an optional subject, but many take it, for 10 years. Now, I'm not saying coding is the answer, but I'm saying it's part of the solution. And I really would encourage you to think about what schools you let your kids go to, because sometimes, I'm going to get myself in trouble here, but sometimes the most traditional schools are actually trading on history. They want those kids to go out and be lawyers and doctors and medical people, and they really do want a very traditional pathway because that's what they know and that's what they trade on. But I can go out to clusters like the Malaya Kalani one in Point England, DSL1 schools, kids with tablets, and these kids are the most motivated kids I've ever seen. And when you talk to them about what they want to be, they say, well, I want to work for Google, I want to be an analyst, I want to be a coder, I want to make computer games. They know it. And so we're going to get a run for our money from some of our kids who actually are going to the schools that we look at and think, gosh, how sad that these schools that don't get the same opportunities, our private schools and our best schools and our really conservative schools. So it's a really great time right now to start thinking about the future as we go forth. So I'm just going to click through. So one of the things about talent is this ability now for kids to self-educate. And we're seeing it in huge numbers. So if you look around the world right now, homeschooling is becoming a big market, particularly in the US. And what we need to look at is why. And the reason is because you can homeschool. Now, I'm certainly not condoning homeschooling by any stretch of the imagination, but what you can find online today, a good example, the Khan Academy. If you're a great mathematician, you don't need to go to school to learn maths. You can push yourself and deep dive into the most intricate parts of maths online with the very best tutors. If you look at the MOOCs programs, the massive online courses, and Coursera's and Udacity's and the TEDx's and they go on and on. All these free courses, if you've got children who are smart and capable, they can go as deep as they want. And what I find really interesting is if you look at the age of 12. So for me, 12 is an interesting number. Children over the age of 12 are very good at adapting. They've lived in an analog world, they've lived before cloud technology and smartphones and Wi-Fi. So they can get out a book, do the job, complain a little bit, but they'll carry on and they'll know they live in this divide. The further down from 12 you go, the more digital a kid becomes. Now, I'm not talking about those who sit and watch YouTube for hours and hours and do very little else, or those who play games and tell them that they're trying to convince you it's got education principles. I'm talking about the kids who are coding, the kids who are making stop-motion videos, the people who are running their own blogs, people who are creating platforms, people who are making games across the world. The younger they get, the more you see it. And I love talking. I've got 100 teachers working on a postgraduate program with me right now and across the whole of Auckland. And I talk to them and they say to the ones who teach in high school is get out of your high school, walk down to the local primary school and hang out with some seven-year-olds. Because they're the ones who are coming. And if you've got seven-year-olds or, you know, five, six, seven, eight-year-olds, you're probably going, I know what you're talking about. Yep, that's my kid. Now, we really have to be mindful of, as these children come through, they're going to expect a different form of education, a different form of career. But this is the time we need to encourage it right across the system. But the power of 12 to me is 12-year-olds who have worked it out. So if you go online and look at what's out there. So here's Tristan. Tristan's an Aucklander who spoke at TEDx last year. Amazing kid, doing incredible things. Again, figured out he could teach himself maths. He now attends Auckland University Maths Papers. He has his own learning platform, Tristan's Learning Hub, and teaches other kids how to do maths, which he built himself. You go through and you'll see app developers, creatives, who are programming and doing robotics and doing interesting electronics and creating their own entrepreneurial businesses, all at the age of 12. And literally, you can go page after page, and I know they're all boys. I'm just hanging that thought, hang on. There we go. She's the most gorgeous 12-year-old I think we've ever seen. But she is 12.
And it's a clothing line.
I know, I'm not going to say it's a clothing line, I'm just going to pretend. Isaac here, he's another Aucklander. He bought his own operating system at the age of 12. Now, these kids aren't geniuses, they're just self-teaching. They figured out how to find the information and push it as far as they can. And they're coming through, and I love them. I see them, they come into the mine lab, and we have, you know, truckloads of these kids who are really amazing. So just to make my point, I'll just do another one. So really I want to leave just a thought, a couple of things. One, the world is changing faster than ever before. So every single day, the number of people with devices increasing dramatically. So just to give you an idea, there are 25 billion internet-enabled devices in the world today. Between now and 2020, according to Cisco, there's going to be 50 billion internet-enabled devices. 87% of the world now have an internet-enabled device or access to one. 87%. And that is education on one device, which is why we're getting this huge rush and surge of people who have got an education. So before it was all about a few people who went to university and got great jobs, and now it's about the masses. The other interesting thing is that universities have now worked out that they don't want undergrads, they're riff-raff, because they have most of them half fall out, and the other half actually, they only get a few that go through to postgraduate. Who they really want are researchers and people in postgraduate study. So what they've worked out is if they can do more of that online, it means they can sort out the riff-raff and get the good ones. So that model is really interesting. So you've got some of the very best Ivy League universities around the world right now working with people, I won't say who, some big boys in the corporate world who are in the process of delivering free degrees within 4 years. And these are not two-bit universities from some backwater. These are big, high-profile universities. Because all they want is to get the people who go through their programs out the other end who are really bright and really talented and fit the jobs or the postgraduate study profile. So we've got a few things to think about. 7.5 billion people in the world. An increase from 140 million to 200 million graduates in 5 years on our doorstep. Those graduates are studying the right subjects, but what they don't add is the flavour of creativity and innovation. So where we can be different is to bring the entrepreneurship, the creativity, the innovation into the mix of the subjects that people choose. We certainly want to make sure our daughters take the subjects that give them more scope, because otherwise they will end up in a service industry. And that is really the hard reality. If they don't have those skills, they will end up serving the rich and famous who come here for tourism. And we don't want that for our daughters. So it's an interesting time, a great time. I'm really excited about the future that we've got, because suddenly we're starting to get it. We've got champions like all of you in this room right here who are championing the cause to say, let's make things different. We know we can do it as a small country, and we can move ahead and really make an amazing difference in this world, and particularly the world of our daughters and our sons and my sons. I really appreciate your time tonight. In 15 minutes, I know it kind of come, it's a bit of a mind dump. Happy to answer any questions if you've got maybe a question before I... Have you got time for a question? Nope, not now. After. After. Thanks very much.
Frances, thank you very much for that. I think it certainly is food for thought. I think probably quite a couple of us would have little kids at home. I certainly have. And I'm now definitely thinking about the power of 12. I'll just reflect on a program that we have, or we partake at Microsoft. We had two students through the other day, and they go to the Papatoa School, and they got selected to be part of a high performers club. And they met with a number of people through the organisation because they're interested in knowing more about IT, and they were Microsoft, yeah, really cool company, want to know more about that. They were very excited they got chosen to come to Microsoft. But when I got to meet with them and we were talking about the subjects that they take and what they wanted to do when they were older, the one girl said to me, I really like what Microsoft has, and there's so many different jobs that are available here, but music is in my family and my mother wants me to become a music teacher. So just to Frances's point, mothers really have got a very, very deep influence on, you know, the careers that our children choose. Anyway, that was just a little personal story from Microsoft. The next speaker that I'm really excited to introduce is Jackie Johnson. And Jackie, sorry, I just got very sidetracked there on my notes. I got a little lost. Jackie is the Chief Executive Officer from IAG Insurance. And she was appointed the CEO there in November 2010. And since joining in 2001, Jackie has held several senior positions in both direct and intermediated insurance, including as Chief Executive Officer of IAG's Business Partnerships Divisions, just as an example. She has more than 20 years' experience in the industry, including roles with Allianz Insurance, HIH Insurance, and IRS Total Injury Management. Please welcome Jackie to the stage.
Thank you, and it's quite awesome to follow Frances, because my career is one of a divergent career where I started out in health science and have a Bachelor of Science, but then majored in occupational therapy in Australia, then did a safety science degree, and then my MBA, and have been in insurance for over 20 years. So I think careers are an interesting journey, and what I wanted to talk about today is about how we stay relevant as women in a connected world. And I think Frances set the scene really, really well about what we're competing against and in a world that's changing very, very quickly. I am not a technologist, so I feel like a bit of a fraud being here in the audience tonight. However, I give my technology teams in IAG quite a hard time because they think I dabble in the thoughts of technology and aspire to be a technologist. So I think I give them a lot of grief. And they always look in horror when I've attended a Microsoft function because they know I come back the next morning quite enthused. But I would also like a call out to say thank you to the males in the audience, because I traditionally will not speak in an all-female function. And the reason for that is I don't want us to be making the mistakes that men have made for a very long time in history where they actually exclude women. And I think times have changed a lot, but I think it takes quite brave males to come into a forum that's called Women in Technology. So I thank you for that, because I think, big round of applause. And I'm not saying it from a trivial perspective. I think for all of us, and Frances called this out, for us to help our daughters and women be successful in this world, it takes diverse groups of skills and knowledge and experiences to support the women. So the very fact several males have turned up today, I'm assuming that you're really interested in the topic and want to do that, and you're not here just to pick up women. Otherwise, I'm onto your game and I'm out of your demographic, but, you know, I'm watching you for all the young women in the audience. But on a serious note, I want to start my story tonight about the staying relevant. I was in Mumbai in January and it was quite a privileged experience, and I'm one of several CEOs in the IAG group, and as was called out, that some of my experience was a CEO in divisions in Australia, and now I'm a division CEO of IAG New Zealand. But as our growing businesses are actually Asian businesses, it was felt that all the CEOs needed to come together in January in our newest business, which is a partnership with the State Bank of India. And it was felt that we'd been as a group to INSEAD and to Stanford, and we'd done a lot of work as a CEO team, but our fastest growing business, that we're all giving opinions to the poor CEO of Asia, none of us had ever been to India, and yet we were giving them our 2 cents worth on a frequent basis. So it was most confronting period for us, because we went with the CEO of World Vision, Tim Costello. For those that might know Tim, he is quite an iconic leader. And we went into 3 different slums in Mumbai. Anyone ever been into some of the, like Dharavi or any of the slums? And what I saw was such a sense of spirit, connectedness and entrepreneurship that I have never experienced in my life. And a lot of that was driven by the females and the access technology that was mobile phones. Now, these people are aspiring to earn $2 a day. And with that, out of their saris, they pull out a mobile phone, which is helping them develop their businesses. And that's the competition we have as women who are middle-class women who don't want the world to change. These women are doing it because they want to do better for their daughters. And when I met, and we've got this photo of this young girl, and we were taking photos, and they wanted a photo of myself and the other female exec in IAG, and there's 2 of us on our exec team. And some of the women that were actually coming together have formed their own businesses. And these businesses are things like not only sewing, but delivering meals to local businesses. And they use their mobile phones to connect. And without the technology, they wouldn't be able to do that. And we asked one of the mothers of a daughter who was at university studying microtechnology and microbiology and dual degree, and she's studying in a 2 metre by 2 metre room where her mother does the cooking for local businesses for their lunches. And we asked the mother about what's her biggest challenge through an interpreter, thinking she was going to talk about, can you see all my children are living in this very small space? My husband's unemployed and I've got one little burner that World Vision has given me to be able to run my business. And she didn't. And it was the most customer-focused language I'd ever heard and would aspire that businesses always are so customer-centric. She said, I deliver all this food at lunchtime and I know how to cook Indian food, but I'm going to have to learn how to cook Chinese food because the tastes are changing of the local people I deliver to. And I'm going to have to use technology to come up to realise how to do that. But I cook 10 hours a day and then I look after my family. But I know I'm going to be able to do that because I have access to technology and search. Now, these people are living in the most awful situations by our standards, but their aspiration for what's possible. And it's the connectivity with the outside world that they're able to do. And I came away more inspired than anything I ever do as a CEO, because I saw that sense of human spirit and that sense of aspiration and possibility. And it was all about, as mums, what they're willing to do for their daughters. And then I flicked to talking to my sister, who is my young sister, who's in her 30s and actually is a technologist. So I asked her for help when I said, oh, you know, I'm a bit in awe of being asked to speak at this presentation. And she actually works at the Motor Accident Authority in New South Wales as a day job, but she's also a teacher in science, design and technology as a part-time teacher, and is part of FIRST, which some people might know, is about robotics and children. And she's got two little boys and I've got a daughter. And she said to me, you have to understand, she said, you've seen all kids. She said, at a young age, girls play with the technology as much as anyone else and they're as interested and they will play and experiment. She said, you see that all around you. And I certainly do. She said, now let me show you a photo of, in Australia, her team, that's 7 to 9 year olds that are in the robot competition. They won the Australian competition. And so they were going over to the US and there was a Kiwi team that won and the Australian team came second. So I will highlight that too. And she said, oh, you New Zealanders. But what she pointed out to me, what's in this photo, which is a little similar to what Frances was highlighting, there is one girl in her robot class. And now she's linked with Macquarie University and the thing that she's doing with this first piece on robots. And she said, it is the mothers who are encouraging the daughters not to go and play with the robots. And it's nothing about the robots. It's about coding. It's about design. It's about engineering and being interested in those skills. And yet by the time they're getting to 7, they're already being filtered out. So how, when we're talking as CEOs of companies, and I was in Diverse New Zealand this morning where Paul Muckerston, MD of Microsoft New Zealand, is also a member of that, we're talking about the pipeline of how do we get people in junior roles to become very senior in our organisations and in the technology areas of our organisation. What hope do we have if at a young age we're filtering out by the time they're in primary school? And what I would challenge all of us in this room is how do we become the role models, not only as parents, but role models about what we stand for and what people see of us and what we interact with. And that's the next point of my presentation. Because I want to talk about social media. Because I think we're our own worst enemy as women. Now, many of you will go, actually, we're all on social media. But what are we really good at? We're great at networking and the collaboration and wanting to come together and care for each other. I sensed that when I came into the room tonight, when we were getting mic'd up. The beautiful Microsoft team wanted to make sure we were comfortable, that we were fed, that we were able to get a drink. I can tell you I present a lot of all-male functions and no one gives a damn whether you've had water or what's happened. It's basically, well, I'm glad you're here. This is what you have to do tonight. Because, you know, it's that caring, nurturing part that is, I believe, part of it is genetically coded. But how do we use that to understand how we compete in a changing world and stay relevant in a very connected world. And when we look at, we do very well on the sharing, and I'll come to this in a minute, we're very good at the discussing, because right from a very early age, that's what we do as females. We share, we connect, and we discuss. Fair enough. It's not a sexist comment, it's just fact. And research shows that. And someone's going, yeah, we love to talk. And we also are okay at networking, but we network very, very differently. We don't network in such of a competitive environment. We network more in the sharing. And we certainly, and I have this big issue within IAG, I have to spend a lot more time with senior females to apply for even more senior jobs who have all the skills. And then the males have about 50% of the skills and go, Brooke would give it a bash. And it's because we don't self-publish enough or have that confidence piece. And social media then highlights the difference. So when we then look at what the skills are when we're looking at our own digital footprint, we need to consider what's our personal brand and what's our professional brand, because we want to be authentic. But social media can out us very easily, never mind all the hacking that's in the media at the moment of what can happen if it goes very wrong. But we need to think about the networks and what we want for our careers, what we want to communicate, and how we create value, and how we create the value financially for ourselves, the companies we work for. And we need to think in a little bit of a different way than the previous slide, which is we'd love to share and we'd like to discuss things. So just as a bit of an exercise before I go on to my next point, I assume everyone's got some sort of mobile device with them, given we're at a tech ed conference. And Paul told me they won't be upset if you do pull out other than Microsoft-style products. I asked him this morning. I want you to pull out whatever mobile device you've got with a search function. And I want you to go into the search function of your choice. That can be Bing or Google. And I want you to actually search your own name. Now, some of you are unique enough to have very unique sounding names that probably will bring up who you exactly are. Now, given most people don't go past page one or two on Google or Bing, I want you to just reflect on your personal and professional brand. You're about to go for a job tomorrow and the person who's interviewing you has already Googled you. Have a look and share it with the person sitting next to you. Is that the persona you want to be known for? Is that your digital footprint? Whether it's you or not, or whether someone could believe that's you. How many of you got a direct hit that you got some links that was about you and your job and something you would say, you know what, everything on that first page, I would love an employer to know that's what I do really well. How many of you got someone that you know is you and you're going, oh my God, I didn't know if I Googled that, that would come up? Or how many got someone go, I actually don't even do that, so how does someone with my name come up? And this is a challenge for us staying relevant in a connected world, because unless you're really into yourself, you don't Google yourself all that often. But the challenge, we can do this over drinks some more, but the challenge is, how do you actually stay relevant in a connected world if you're not paying enough attention on your personal brand and professional brand? And it turns to what I call authenticity as a leader in any field and in your personal life. And these two circles are something that several years ago, I actually got asked to do the startup business for IAG. And I was a bit in awe of this, and the board was willing to give me quite a considerable amount of money, and particularly in the light of the GFC starting. And the board started to talk to me, so I went to Palo Alto to say, how do you actually get the psyche of a startup rather than being a big traditional leadership company? And the challenge that we ended up having was, how do you get to really understand what the future world would be versus what you're coming from? And for me, I'd just come from being the CEO of one of our largest divisions, which I'd actually banned everyone from having Facebook. And I was going to be the CEO of the internet insurer. And I realised I had a brand problem, significantly, because all those 3,000 people sitting in IAG would see me in the media talking about being the cool internet CEO, and they knew I'd banned Facebook. And so I thought, yep, I need to fess up, and I need to actually... So I went to the financial reviewer who were doing a piece on the business that we were launching, and I said, we need to talk to it about, it's not a pretty website, it's the connectedness of... And we did co-creation with an external community of how you co-created. Car insurance isn't all that sexy, by the way, but, you know, we actually got people to come and co-create with us. And I did this media piece about you never stop learning as a leader. And the things I have learned is the power of social networking, so that everyone who read it would know I was still being authentic, that I had had to learn the error of my ways, and that actually Facebook wasn't as evil, and certainly if people were accessing it through work and they were still getting outcomes for their business, it wasn't a bad thing as long as you had all the right security and everything else around it. And I had a really good person who was working with me and still works in the group, and they sat me down and they said, look, you're really very authentic leader, and anyone who ever works for you or has connected with you in any part of your career, even when you were a therapist versus your safety career, the boards you've sat on, people know who you are and feel you're quite authentic. So what you have to do is just map that and think about what people know about you at work and what people know about you at home, and then what's the intersecting point that you're passionate about, and whatever you're doing on social media, really make sure that's your persona. And it was probably the most valuable piece of advice I have ever had in my career, because that has helped steer. So if you follow me on Twitter, and we've had a very scary occasion back in 2008, where I suddenly had all these younger males in their late 20s following me, and they followed Lady Gaga, Beyonce, myself, and a lot of car racing. And I thought, this is very different for a CEO of an insurer. And it turns out, if you Google Jackie Johnson with an E without an I, she is a weather girl in the US and is on sites like midlife.com and midlifecrisis.com and hotchicks.com. So I think these people who started to follow me on Twitter must have been very disappointed, because what I tweet about is creativity, change, learning, mindfulness, travel, climate change, risk, insurance, innovation, career development, communication and leadership, and occasionally Liverpool Football Club, things I'm doing with my family, and photography and my dogs. So they must have thought, gee, she's not as cool as she looks on TV. And so I think, and it was only an ABC journalist rang me and said, Jackie, it must be really cool to be a weather girl and to be a CEO of an insurer. And I said, Andrew, what are you on about? And he goes, have you ever Googled yourself with an E? And obviously he had. And I said to him, and he said, isn't it funny how the world works? And it suddenly explained to me all these new Twitter followers, because they actually thought I was someone else. So for us to really stay relevant about our own personal and professional brand, as long as you're staying true to what you believe, people will see that that's you. And for us who have names that are fairly common sort of names like Johnson, even though that's my married name, it's even harder. But it's about how do you become authentic. The other thing is about the use of social media in different ways. So LinkedIn I use very much professionally. And when I look at Twitter, I use that, and my Twitter feed gets pulled up through our internet on a daily. It was a great idea of the comms team as I was arriving in New Zealand, that all the teams could get to know me really quickly. So I have to be particularly careful about what I tweet and when, and certainly not late of the night after a few drinks, but about how you stay on message. And then when I look at Facebook, you tend to try and have a closed Facebook community. I'm not sure how closed it ever can be, because that's how my family connect with me, particularly given we live in another country. And so I think we all have to think about what is the footprint you're creating. And this morning, hearing at breakfast, the CEO breakfast, about how every time, and those of you who are at the speech last night and the lunchtime speech, that every piece of data is replicated 7 times. So even if you think you're erasing it, you're probably not, and it will come up at some point. And I think we have to educate our daughters about that, because what might be really cool as an 18-year-old, is that the professional brand you want to stand for? So to stay relevant in a changing world, we have to compete against people who are living with $2 a day and are very entrepreneurial, very customer-centric and willing to use technology. And we also have to think about how are we grooming people coming through our organisations, and particularly think about your personal and professional brand and what's the digital footprint you're leaving so that you can actually stay relevant in a very changing world. So thank you for having me here, and it's been delightful. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There really were a lot of messages and lots of food for thought in that. I know certainly when I'm recruiting at Microsoft and looking for people to employ, the first place I go is LinkedIn, just to see what people are up to in terms of their career, where they've been, schools they've been to. But yeah, I look up on I use Bing. I have to. I work for Microsoft. But yeah, I actually look on Bing and Google because it sometimes delivers different results. But yeah, I'm apparently getting married in Salt Lake City on the 2nd of November. So if anyone would like to come, please feel free. So yeah, very different results. Gordon's also a very, very common surname. So the next speaker we have joining us is Jessica DeVita. And Jessica is actually from the Microsoft US subsidiary. Jessica is a technical evangelist and has been called a technology whisperer, which I'm hoping you're going to tell us a little bit more about. It sounds really exciting. And she really loves helping IT people learn new tools and strategies to better support their environment. Prior to joining Microsoft, Jessica founded Uber Geek Girl, managing the IT systems of successful individuals and businesses in the entertainment industries around Hollywood. That would have been a really awesome job. She earned a stellar reputation built on the exceptional IT expertise and outstanding people skills. Please join me in welcoming Jessica.
Thank you for that introduction. Thank you so much. It is so lovely to see all of you here tonight. This is my first time in New Zealand, and everybody has been so lovely and welcoming to me, and I can't thank you enough for having me here tonight. I really loved listening to your stories, and if any of you went to James Whitaker's talk last night and this morning, you know, this idea of success and creating that for yourself is kind of the theme of what I want to talk to you about tonight. I think the first thing I wanted to tell you is that my goal has been to get out of my own way. I think we all, in different ways, are in our own way when we think about success. And I think I want you to take away this idea that I want you to be the woman that you needed when you were starting your career. We think about this idea of mentorship and being a mentor, not just being mentored. It's a two-way relationship. A little brief introduction. I started my career at the help desk, you know, and so many people are like, I don't want to work at the help desk. I want to start, you know, somewhere else. We all have to start somewhere. We all have to begin at the beginning. And I don't regret that because I've learned so much about helping people and talking to people. And it allowed me to put myself in place of the user and really understand what they're seeing and how they're feeling and what does that mean to them when Outlook doesn't work and how is that preventing them from doing their job. And so through that experience, I thought, I'm good at this. I can help them. They're good at what they do. Let's meet in the middle. So that was an incredible experience for me, being at the help desk and you know, helping people solve problems who were frustrated and angry and tired. And that was my experience. But even before that, though, by all accounts, I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be here tonight. In the fourth grade, I walked out of my class because my teacher pissed me off. And I walked home, and I said, I'm never going back. I didn't like what she said to me. I didn't like it. She said that I was too brash, too bold, too loud. I want you to be loud. Don't let anyone tell you to be quiet or to shut up or to contain yourself. At 15, I quit school because my mother couldn't take care of us. I had to move out and get a job and get an apartment and grow up very, very, very fast. I did go ahead and get my GED, And at 21, I became a single mother because his father passed away. And I went back to school. And I went to nursing school. And I did everything I could because I knew that I had this young man to take care of. Now I have three children, and I'm so proud of all my three sons. And I hope that I'm raising them to respect women and to be in collaborative work environments and understand that we all have a right to be here. So just know that you have a right to be here. Be the woman that you needed when you were younger. And I am not clicking the right thing. Here we go. I think success is a really funny word because we need to define what that means for ourselves. It is not a linear path. Anything good and creative and awesome is never done in a linear fashion. So please, please understand that your success will and should be different, and it's not going to be a straight path. It's going to be ugly and awful at times. Don't give up. I didn't give up. Many times I wanted to give up. Many times I wanted to walk away from my IT career because it's difficult and people don't want you there. And when you're good, you have a target on your back. But you haven't arrived until you have a hater. But success is something that is, you can't have it. You can't own it. You can rent it, but you've got to pay that rent every day. You do that by showing up. I'm not talking about showing up on time, although that's really important. Showing up 5 minutes early, otherwise you're late. I'm talking about showing up for yourself and for your colleagues and for your company. How you show up in meetings, how you present yourself, how you feel when you walk in, and what your goals and intentions are for every interaction that you have every day. See if I've got the right one now. I don't particularly like Woody Allen, but he did say 80% of success is showing up. And I do think that's true. So we talk about being a woman in IT and how there's not enough of us and there's so few of us and all of that. And there's so many, you know, it's a male-dominated industry and all of that. And all of those things are true. But if you think about it, if you show up, if you are there, if you show up at meetings and you say what you feel, that's success. Being honest and showing up in that way is so important. Here's how I show up, and here's some of the things that I've done that have helped me along my path to getting here tonight that have been so special and important as I look back and as I reflect, how did this happen? Number one was having the courage to submit for conferences. Those call for papers, they're looking for you. They want to know your unique experience because it's valuable to someone. And even if it helps one person, it's worth it. The best teachers are those that they themselves are still learning. So that thing you love that you're passionate about, it's Twitter or whatever it is, or it's infrastructure or virtualization, whatever you love, go and teach it. There's all kinds of conferences that would absolutely love you and welcome you with open arms. Because when you can stand here and share what you're learning, that's very powerful, very, very impactful. Showing up in social media, Jackie talked about how social media is so important, and I want to tell you that Twitter is amazing. I have met people that I would never meet in any other circumstance. There's no barrier to who you can talk to on Twitter. Look at the people that you know. Look at who they follow. Look at who follows them. Follow the people who are doing the work that you want to do. Ask them questions. Share links. Share what you're learning on social media. It's very, very powerful. I went to a DevOps conference a month ago, and some of the people that I absolutely idolize and have read all of their books, I met them, and they knew me because I had already been interacting with them in social media and giving value in those those kinds of areas. So don't neglect your social media and your brand. It's really powerful. I can absolutely trace how I got to this job to Twitter. And had I had more time, I will go through and actually share that with you. But it's really powerful, really powerful. Because at the end of the day, I want to come home and know that I was fierce and I was loud and it was okay. Because that one manager who told me, "You were grandstanding in that meeting. Your personality, you're very loud. You need to tone down. Do not tone down for anyone." I know I was very young when that manager told me that. And actually, upon reflecting, I could have used a little coaching around how to be effective in my communications with other people. It was really, you know, something to learn. But I was, 23, and I was going to just run the world. So here's the problem that I think we need to be thinking about is that less than half of our undergraduates who actually start or declare a major in STEM fields go ahead and complete that degree. That's kind of a frustrating number for me. You know, I think Sheryl Sandberg talks about how don't leave before you leave. So we have women coming into STEM fields and computer science fields that have all the intention in the world of coming out and doing that. And they leave. They change their mind. They change their mind for a number of reasons. One is they don't see anyone that looks like themselves. And they say, "I don't belong in this field because there's no one like me." We need to see ourselves in that field, and we need to be visible to these women as they look at our careers. And then when you're in your career, you know, don't leave before you leave, Sheryl says. And that's a tough lesson because, as I said, I wanted to leave many times. As a mother of three boys, I was a single parent for 10 years. I have an autistic son, and a lot of times I've left work and said, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. Is this worth it? Is it, what am I doing? And here's the thing, is worth it. It is worth it because I can provide for my family, and I can show up every day at work and know that I am valuable and I'm giving value. So these numbers concern me. So what do we do about it? It's not enough to feel upset about these numbers. It's not enough to think, we're going to, what are we going to do to make IT a more welcoming place for women? And I do think we need to work on, by the way, making it a more welcoming place to women before we get more of them in there. But we need to act. Action trumps anxiety every time. Anytime you're feeling like, I'm not enough, I can't. Imposter syndrome, we all struggle with that at times in our career, I certainly have. We need to turn that into action. Here's how I see that, and here's how I'm doing that. I look at the nonprofits and the organizations that are working and taking action to help girls and women get in at IT. And they're doing that with hands-on experiences. One of my favorite organizations is DIY Girls. I have supported this organization financially through small donations. You don't have to give a lot, but every little bit counts. Because what Luce Rivas, who is the founder of DIY Girls, does is she holds these six-week summer camps for girls. And on week four, she allowed Microsoft to come in and build an app workshop for those girls, and every single girl built an app. And they could not believe. This is a group that serves really underserved and underprivileged kids, and their minds are just blown when they, I can make an app? They have no idea that that's possible. 2 weeks later, we did another event for women and their daughters, also through DIY Girls. And look at these girls. This is impactful. Whether you're spending your time 15 minutes being a volunteer to help people, sign people in at the door, find a way to participate in these communities because that's where the magic is happening. This workshop was incredible. We had over 100 women and girls learning coding and apps. It was phenomenal. And for me to just have been a small part of that, I wasn't even able to be here because I was traveling to another conference. But I helped organize this and put it together, and that was just so special and rewarding for me. A couple of months ago in July, I sat on a panel for Cyber Girls, which was a special event we put on at Cal Poly Pomona. And I sat on a panel with physicists and mathematicians and many other incredibly talented women. And I felt weird because I didn't graduate from high school. Who am I to be here? It does not matter. When you show up for yourself, these kinds of magical opportunities happen. And sitting on this panel just absolutely was phenomenal and so much fun, sharing my experiences and learning from the other women that were involved. STEM Advantage is another organization that I support. I've been a mentor for them for 2 years. They provide 2 years of paid tuition and books for computer science girls who are, we really want them to graduate. We want to stop them from changing that major. We want them to finish their degree. So I've been a mentor for them for 2 years now, and what a phenomenal program. They provide a paid internship and the tuition and a mentor. So much fun to be involved. We can't do it alone. We need to work together to support each other. When you come into the workplace, there's metrics, there's quotas, there's things that people will want you to attain and achieve. Those numbers are not what I want you to think about. I want you to think about the numbers that matter to you, that your work is meaningful to you. If it's meaningful to you, it will be beneficial, and those numbers will matter. Get out of your comfort zone, because that's where the magic happens. It doesn't happen here. You have to go. Go break things. Go do what you want. Don't be afraid. And when someone tells you that you're being too bold and loud, say thank you. Thank you. Because that kind of feedback, take it all in. But do what you want. Because it's not good to sit back and wait for someone to come and give you the, you know, permission. Are you waiting for someone to give you permission to do what you want? No, don't wait. Go do it yourself. Get out there. Thank you.
I love that slide, by the way. I might have to use it. One of the things that Jessica said about brand really sparked a thought of what one of my colleagues always says to me. And she always says, never dress for the job you have today. Dress for the job that you want tomorrow. So really about brand, keep that in the back of your mind. So just in closing, I'd like to cover off a couple of things. Microsoft is constantly looking at ways that we can engage with women in IT, and we're trying new things. Tonight was one of them, and I thoroughly enjoyed the evening, and thank you again for coming through. I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did. We've done a couple of other things out in the industry as well, but we're wanting to expand our commitment and show our commitment more out in the industry. And what we've done is we've chosen to work with a group called Geek Girl Dinners. And Sasha Judd is here tonight, somewhere in the room. Sasha, if you can just pop your hand up. Nope, Sasha's not here. Okay, Sasha was here. She is speaking at, she's got a slot here at TechEd, and she's one of the two women who actually runs the Geek Girl dinners, and Microsoft's going to be sponsoring some of those dinners. So we'd love to see you at some of those dinners and really hope that we do. Just a couple of other things. Please could you take the time out to fill out the evaluation form. We'd love to hear from you about what you thought about the event today. It takes about 20 to 30 seconds, so if you could just pop onto your mobile phone, I'll leave the URL up there for a couple of seconds. If you can all just do that, it'd be really helpful so we can improve, hear topics that you might want to, you know, hear about in the future. I'll have to ask Jordana. Oh.
So I organise the Girl Geek dinners in Wellington. The next one is on the 23rd of October, and it's at the Reserve Bank building. So there'll be more information on the Girl Geek dinners Facebook page. There's a Wellington Girl Geek dinners website and a Twitter account as well.
Cool. We love the diversity. So just talking about tweeting, if you have something to say, tweet us at hashtag TNZ. And finally, thank you so much again for coming and joining us this evening. If you want to catch up with any of the speakers, everyone will be outside at the networking session. So thank you.